In 1977, a song was released by John Paul Young. And the title of the song was Love Is In The Air. If you admit to it, everybody's singing it. That's it. Oh, you can't remember it, Tony. All right, okay. Love is in the air. You know, and as you've been singing, it went on, you know, everywhere, looking around, love is in the air, every sight and every sound. It was essentially, it was a love song that he was singing. And in some ways, some people said it was a comment of the time. If he's made that song today, I don't think he'd sing exactly the same words. He might say something along the lines of, anger is in the air. Doesn't matter where you are, if you're on the roads, you'll have come across road rage. It's estimated that 54% of drivers in the UK have been subject to road rage. Okay? That was sort of first named in the 1980s, but I'm sure it went on a little before that. It ranges from simply being sworn at. It can extend to being followed, intimidated in other ways. There have even been cases where people have been rammed, pulled over, and even killed. Last year, a man was beaten to death in Nottinghamshire after a collision. Okay? Two cars collided, he drove off, the other car was so... Well, the driver of the car, not the car. The driver of the car was so incensed, he followed him. And when the other driver arrived at his destination, he jumped out and he beat him to death. Anybody here been on an internet forum where it's gone suddenly very, very angry? Yeah?
Facebook.
Facebook, yeah. Have you noticed how people seem to be on incredibly short fuses? In no time at all, what seems to be a discussion suddenly erupts into something completely different. Where people are, you know, effectively... Well, they type in capitals, there's all the invective comes forward. It seems to almost flick from this is a discussion to this is rage. Here's one for you. Political debate. There's not much happening in the political world at the moment, is there?
There's not much debate.
Exactly, yeah. In 2016, the MP Jo Cox was murdered. She had received numerous death threats before that. The MP who took over her constituency, Tracy Brabin, received veiled death threats shortly after she took up the post. MPs have been reporting death threats to such an extent that a special police group has been set up to monitor and act. And it's said that during the last year, the number of incidents that the police regarded as actionable rose to 242 complaints. The MPs and the MP staff who submitted these complaints said they weren't all the threats that were received, but they were the ones that they thought the police could actually do something about. It was also reported this week that Anna Soubry, a Tory MP, when she was talking to a news camera crew, was harangued by certain people, and one man shouted out, "You need to be Jo Coxed. You need to be Jo Coxed." And when we sort of talk about anger, there's no doubt that there's an awful lot of anger about. And then we say, but that's not how it is in the Bible. But anybody with any Bible knowledge comes back at you straight away and says, God got angry. In fact, it was almost summed up very nicely by one cartoon character who said, whenever you read the Old Testament, God is always crabby and snarky to everybody. He's telling his people to go out and kill them off. He's getting upset. There's firebolts and there's thunder and there's lightning. God gets angry. So why shouldn't we? Well, let's just hold on a minute. First of all, who are we talking about? We're talking about God and we're comparing ourselves to God? Like God gets angry, so it's okay for me. I don't think so. We're talking about different things here. We cannot compare ourselves to God. But let's have a look at some Old Testament examples. I mean, there are many, there's no doubt about it, but let's just examine two. If anybody knows the Bible, the first thing that somebody will say will be, what about the guy who reached out to steady the ark and God struck him dead? Uzzah. All right, you'll read that in 2 Samuel chapter 6, verses 1 to 7. What happened, basically, the Ark of the Covenant had been captured by the Philistines, carried into the Philistines' temples at various points. They found out that it was a little bit too hot to handle. Various things that had happened. They'd got a statue of their god. It had fallen over. Then at another point, God decided that although they'd stood it up, he'd sort this one out and it broke into pieces. All right, and then they decided at that point, actually, let's get rid of this thing. So they put it on a cart and sent it out towards the Israelites, and the Israelites got it back. And David decided, we'll have it back in Jerusalem. So what did he do? He got a cart, just like the Philistines did. Stuck the Ark of the Covenant on a cart, and everybody went off cheering. And as it's going along the road, got a little bit rocky. I suppose there wasn't very good suspension on the cart. The ark looked as though it was going over, and this guy stuck his hand out, grabbed it to stop it falling over, and God struck him dead. And said, look, God got angry about nothing. Well, actually, he didn't. I mean, let's have a look at the situation. First of all, God had told the Israelites how they ought to carry the ark. It even made it fairly obvious because he put rings on rather than handles. And the idea was that they would put poles through the rings so they didn't actually touch it. Because this was something that was very special. And just because the Philistines had acted like that, the Israelites thought they could too. Well, the fact of the matter is, they couldn't. God had told them how to carry the ark, and they didn't listen. It's not as if he just sort of whispered it one time. He told them a couple of times. And as I say, the actual construction of the ark said it isn't treated that way. Secondly, they stuck it on a cart. You know, when you get an important event, you know, say, as sometimes rarely happens, England wins some sort of major event, you parade them through, you get this, you know, double-decker bus, you deck it out. They're just footballers, not being funny. But you treat them with respect, yeah? Shouldn't you treat God's presence with respect? God had told them what the ark was, and they stuck it on a cart. That's insulting. But not only did they show lack of respect towards the ark, they showed a lack of respect for what it represented. It symbolised God's presence, but also the covenantal relationship that Israel had. And then this guy stuck his hand out to touch it. God had said, you don't touch the ark. Another instance, what about Moses? God got angry with Moses. Yeah? Moses, being in Pharaoh's court, he'd gone away into the desert. God confronted him at the burning bush and said to him, I want you to go back and to bring the Israelites out of captivity. Moses didn't want to do it. So first of all, he said, who am I that I should go to Pharaoh? God said, well, I'm sending you, so that's who you are. But then Moses turned around and says, well, who are you? He says, well, I'm God. Go and do it. Then he said, well, the Israelites won't listen to me. So, okay, we'll give you various signs. Then he said, well, I can't speak well. He says, okay, I'll give you Aaron. And then we actually get down to the root of it, and he says, actually, I don't want to go. And at that point, it says, God got angry. For all the other things, they were just, there could have been legitimate excuses, but somehow I don't think they were. It's like when somebody comes to us and asks us to do something. we think, well, I don't want to do it. What can I say? Yeah? How can I get out of this? So that's what Moses did. But it was only when he, and in many ways, God sort of followed through and said, well, yeah, we'll sort out these problems. And it was only when he got to the actual fact of the matter and said, well, I don't want to go, that God got angry. But what did he do at that point? He told him to go. So yeah, God gets angry in the Old Testament. Well, we've got to examine the reasons why he gets angry. Why? Is there a just cause for it? If we read it in context, so often we find that there's a reason for God's anger. Now again, anybody who knows the Bible, and sometimes people who don't know it very well, they'll say, well, Jesus got angry. Now let's just have a quick straw poll. Can you think of one instance where we see Jesus got angry? Right. I was hoping you'd say that. Thank you. You must have been reading the same script as me. This is in three Gospels, Matthew, Mark and John. In Matthew, it's in chapter 21, 12 to 13. In Mark, it's chapter 11, verses 15 to 17. And in John, it's chapter 2, verses 13 through to 17. They're very similar. I'll just read one of them. We'll read the Matthew one. What I want you to listen for is the words angry, or a word that's related to angry. Okay? Here we go. It says, Jesus entered the temple courts and drove out all those who were buying and selling. He overturned the tables of the money changers and the benches of those who were selling doves. It is written, he said, my house will be called a house of prayer, but you are making it a den of robbers. Okay. Anybody hear the word angry?
No.
Anger?
No.
Upset?
He's upset, yeah.
He's upset, yeah? Why do we think he was angry? There's a story told that a lecturer was talking to some Bible students and he gave them exactly this passage. Well, these three passages. And he said, you know, we want to analyse this and see what we can find from it. And his question to them was Jesus angry? And they said, yes. Now see if you come up with the same reason as they did. Why do you think he was angry? He overturned the tables. That's exactly the same answer that the Bible students came up with. So at that point, the lecturer got a table and pushed it over. And he said, I'm not angry. He says, what I'm doing is I'm making a point that Jesus could have done exactly the same thing without being angry. The text does not say that Jesus was angry. It says the zeal of the Lord is consuming me and I'm concerned for the reputation of God, but it doesn't say he was angry. Now, we could get angry and think, right, we're going to do something here. You know, I was playing a game one time with some children, and it was a board game, and everything was going all right. There was me and there were another four children playing, and the youngest one just wasn't doing very well. The counters were moving round the board, except hers wasn't. She was landing on these squares at centre back. She wasn't answering questions, although they were aimed at children. And these counters were moving further away from her counter until it got to the point where her brother was just about to win. It was his turn and everybody assumed that he was going to win, except he didn't, because she got the board and she threw it across the room. He didn't win. Was she angry? Oh, yes. And we read into this passage how we would be. We get upset and we do something about it. I'll sort you lot out. Yeah? It doesn't say that that's how Jesus was. It doesn't say he was angry. So often we assume that that's what he was. So, do you think that in the Gospels at any point there is a passage somewhere that says that Jesus got angry? I'm not talking to you, Ray, at the moment. You're nodding at me. Anybody else? Is there a passage anywhere? Yes, there is.
Did he get angry when he woke up on the bar?
Sorry?
Did he get
He didn't get angry, no.
He was upset. He said something about being upset about it, though, didn't
he? Well, he said, "What are you doing, little faiths?" Which I think was something of a pet name for them, because they didn't really believe. But he didn't get angry. No, it doesn't say he got angry. The only place that we read that he did get angry is in Mark, and it's in chapter 3, verse 1 to 6. And what happens there, he's in a synagogue. The Pharisees are there, and they'd heard that this Jesus went around healing people. And he had the audacity to heal people on the Sabbath, on the Sunday. And it says, some of them were looking for a reason to accuse him. So they watched him closely to see if he would heal on the Sabbath. Jesus said to the man with a shriveled up hand, "Stand up in front of everyone." Then Jesus asked them, "Which is lawful on the Sabbath, to do good or to do evil, to save life or to kill?" But they remained silent. Basically, they couldn't answer. He looked around them in anger and he was deeply distressed. He was distressed at their stubborn hearts, and he said to the man, "Stretch out your hand." He stretched it out, his hand, and he was completely healed. Then the Pharisees went out and began to plot with the Herodians how they might kill Jesus. So why was he angry?
Because of
the stubborn hearts. They would rather see their rules followed than this guy set free from the shriveled up hand. They would rather see somebody bound than somebody blessed. They would rather see somebody limited rather than liberated. They would rather see somebody restricted rather than released. And so we see the anger of Jesus, and how did he express it? He healed him. That's a bit of a sort of a, oh, is that it? That's the result of your anger. You sort of go out and heal somebody. Well, actually, yes. Did he lash out at them? No. Did he harangue them? No. Did he organise some sort of revolution or revolt against them? No. He healed the man. When Jesus did have personal attacks, Peter tells us in 1 Peter 2:21 to 23 how he responded. He says, "Christ suffered for you, leaving you an example that you should follow in his steps. He committed no sin and no deceit was found in his mouth. When they hurled insults at him, he did not retaliate. And when he suffered, he made no threats. He simply entrusted himself to the one who judges justly." Now, we can compare ourselves to Jesus because whilst he was completely God, he was also completely man. So that means we ought to be reacting in the same way as him. So there can be times for anger, but how do we express it? I'm not arguing for a passionless Christianity. It's said that passion can be the fire when harnessed. It gives you power. When harnessed, it can give you power. And there's no doubt at times we will feel God's anger. But it won't be when somebody's had a go at us. It won't be when somebody's sort of not done for us what we think they really ought to have done for us. It won't be when we feel wronged. It'll be when God's law has not been followed, and when God's laws have not been honoured. And we have to be very careful and examine the source of the anger. Whose rights are we getting angry about? God's or ours? Let's not forget that in Romans 12:14, it actually says, "Bless those who persecute you. Bless and do not curse." We even have Jesus' warning in Matthew 5:22, and he says, "But I tell you that anyone who is angry with a brother or sister will be subject to judgment." You might think, wow, that's a bit tough, isn't it? It actually uses a Greek word, well, he obviously used Aramaic, but it's been translated into Greek as orge, and that means an abiding settled habit with the purpose of revenge. Okay? So if anybody has a brother or sister who wrongs them and basically turns round, whether verbally or inside, says, "I'll get you back for that." That's the sort of thing that Jesus is talking about. It's not godly to get your own back.
No.
Yeah? It is not godly to get your own back. That can be very hard. But so often we see the wrong that is done to us so very, very clearly, we think. The Bible also warns about another kind of anger, for example, in Ephesians 4:31. Before I tell you that, I need to tell you a little story. When I was at school in the sort of early 70s, 1960s, oh, we are getting back in time, aren't we? Anyway, what we had in the metalwork class was a casting facility. And what we did is we could melt aluminium in a crucible and then pour it into a mould. You wouldn't get any schools these days doing anything like this, all right? You've got molten metal at something like 800 degrees and the kids are handling it. Not the molten metal, obviously. You don't only do it once. That's other stories. And what you do is you pour the molten metal into a mould and cast. And the way we had it is we had a small oven, and the crucible was put in the top, and then the aluminium was put in there. Now, what you had to do is, before you put the crucible in, you had to light the flame, then put the crucible in, then put the aluminium in. And the way you did it was, you turned the gas on, and you dropped a piece of newspaper that you'd lit into the bottom, and that'd ignite the gas. Now, this was the first time I'd done it, all right? I knew how to do it, I thought. Turned the gas on, lit the paper, dropped it in, didn't light. Had a quick look. The paper had gone out. The flame had gone out. Oh, get another piece of paper. So I'm looking round. Maybe you're thinking, or you should be thinking, what I haven't done at this point. But anyway, I'm looking round, found another piece of paper, tried to quickly light the match. Of course, it never lights quickly when you want it, does it? Anyway, eventually I lit it. I stood over the top of the crucible, and I dropped it in, and it did light. The flame shot straight past me, and this is why I am how I am. Not quite. Have you smelt hair when it's burnt? It stinks, doesn't it? Yeah. Well, what happened to me was all my eyelashes disappeared. I do have eyebrows, I know they're very faint, but they'd all gone. And this fringe wasn't quite as it is at the moment, but the fringe disappeared as well. And it was all that sort of crumbly stuff. Boy, was it a shock. It just went up in my face. Correct. Next time, when I lit that and it didn't light, the first thing I do was turn the gas off. But the Bible warns us about an anger that goes up in your face. The Greek word that's used there is thumos. It's translated as being turbulent, boiling, a raging agitation, a flash. Have you come across people that go up in your face?
Yeah.
Have you come across people who are on such a short fuse, sometimes you don't get too close to them because you know what's going to happen? And the Bible warns us about having a raging anger like that. Have you been in a supermarket queue where the queue isn't moving as fast as it ought to be? And again, somebody, what's going on here? You know, why don't they go to the queue that's wherever? You know, this is 10 items or less, or, yeah? There, straight away. When somebody has been served and the waiter makes a mistake, bang, there, straight away. That's the thumos, that's the raging anger, that's the short fuse, that's what the Bible warns us about. An intolerance, and in so many ways, a lack of consideration for the other people. A guy you might have heard of, you might not. It's called Chuck Colson. He's dead now. But he served as a special counsel to President Nixon from 69 to 73. And he was involved in the Watergate scandal. In 1974, he served 7 months in the federal prison as the first member of the Nixon government to be convicted of crimes because of Watergate. He became a Christian just before he went to prison. And his conversion sparked a radical life change in him. He started a non-profit ministry, Prison Fellowship, in America, and has done various things then. But he saw the lack of civility, the over-the-top fury that was running. And as we see today in our country. And he correctly identified it. And this is what he said. He said that they are not being courteous. They're not being civil. He said the virtue of courtesy is rooted in the idea that each of us was created in the image of a loving God. And that's what gives each and every person worth and value. It gives us dignity, and it makes each of us worthy of respect. So the ones that flare up and flash with anger, how do we see other people? Are they fellow creatures that God has made? Are they fellow people who have equal worth and value in the eyes of God? When we lose the idea that they're made in the image of God, then what value, what worth do people have? Am I preeminent and everything is subservient to me and my needs and wants? So often it's the case that we dehumanize the other, the one who differs with us in the argument. We build this caricature of what they're like. And how many times have you heard it said that when people come together and actually start talking, they realise that actually they're people just like us? You know, during the Second World War, and it's not just then, it happens all the time, the enemy, the Germans, were different. They weren't like us. Until you actually met some Germans, and then you realise that, funnily enough, they were. But we dehumanise the ones who we consider to be opponents, against us, not for us, standing in our way. So how should we be? Well, Jesus reminded us in John chapter 15, verse 18, if the world hates you, keep in mind, it hated me first. But even so, it tells us that God loved the world. In Romans 13, 8 to 10, we read, let no debt remain outstanding except the continuing debt to love one another. For whoever loves others has fulfilled the law and the commandments. And Jesus himself was asked about who is my neighbour. And he said, the one who you wouldn't even talk to, the Samaritan, anybody. They're your neighbour and you love them as yourself. We need to be careful with anger, because more often than not, it's sparked from us rather than God. 1 Corinthians 13 reminds us that love is not easily angered. It isn't on a short fuse. If we're considering others, if we're thinking about others, then we won't get so angry with them. And as James 1, 19 to 20 puts it, my dear brothers and sisters, take note of this. Everyone should be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry, because human anger does not produce the righteousness that God desires. The fast first response is often the bad human response, and we have to give chance for God's love to work through us. Human anger often stems from personal hurt, offence, felt wrongs, or our rights not being respected. Ephesians reminds us not to be angry. We need sometimes just to take a step back, breathe again, and think about it. We need to allow Christ to live through us. As we see his life in us, then more often than not, that life will be shown in love, not anger. And to echo John Paul Jung, and to add a little bit, let love be in the air.